Hey, Darksiders. We're gonna take a detour away from sex crimes and murder. Oh, wait. Actually, there is a bit of sex crime talk. But it's not our focus. Tonight, we're diving into the world of creepshow art. It's actually been the biggest challenge yet, and not just because so many of the greats have already been covered. Cecil McFly made a glorious 4.5-hour documentary about the entire community that I can't recommend enough, but no, this wasn't like the other cases. There's no news articles or court documents, only internet gossip and other channels like us who either watched the drama unfold in real time or researched it later, like our unfortunate writers. This isn't a little spat either. This is real, life-ruining, obsessive stalker level drama. And if you want to know everything, we're going to be here a while. I suggest you get comfortable. I want to make an extremely important disclaimer up front. I'm not saying anyone is guilty of anything. I am simply presenting information to assist you in formulating your own opinions. Think of me as a guide escorting you through a minefield. We're just trying to get to the other side. Also, this should go without saying, but please do not seek out the parties involved in these events. I assure you, they've all suffered enough. Even I did not reach out to them because each one has spoken on the topic ad nauseum. It would be unfair to interrupt their lives with questions they've already answered. Finally, Creepshow says fuck on an EDP level, so I'm gonna clean up the language to add a little bit of class. Alright, disclaimer over. Let's get started. Creepshow's beginnings. I know we'd normally start with, Shannon was born on this day in this city, but it'll be easier on both of us if we just start with the birth of her YouTube channel in 2018. Creepshow art centered around, well, Shannon's art. She would record herself drawing and add a story from her personal life for the latest internet drama over the footage. Obviously, this was nothing new, but Shannon's raw emotion separated her from the pack. She was adept at speaking to the audience like they were her best friends, and she had no problem sharing intimate, embarrassing details. In fact, it became her shtick, and people loved it. Since her channel is still up today, I was able to watch the entire library. All 4 years' worth. Some were deleted as the drama unfolded, but if there were any uploads before May 11th's Tumblr Hates Artists, I don't know about them. In one of the earlier episodes, she mentions her birthday is May 13th. And later, we hear she began her channel on or around her birthday, which leads me to believe that this was at least one of the first few. When I began watching, I knew the basic story behind her drama, but I still needed to see the source materials before presuming to speak on it. There was a long road ahead, and after days of purely taking notes, screenshots, and timestamps, I finally had a cohesive outline to guide us safely through the minefield. I just need you to listen very closely. And if you get lost, simply skip back a few seconds. Don't try to be a hero, okay, Jerry? Because so much of the issue revolves around Shannon's trustworthiness, I think it's important to give a decent rundown of her first impression. Within 50 seconds, she calls Tumblr a trash website and warns the audience she did not structure her opinions in clear, concise points, nor can she prove her claims. Instead, she included a reference video from another artist, Miss Zizi, explaining why she hated Tumblr. Essentially, she's saying, I don't need to prove my points because this girl did it for me. The video is a basic rant about a time she ran two successful blogs. The first was only a Jonas Brothers / General Young Adult Disney blog, whatever that means. It had roughly 2,000 followers, but she, quote, just chose to delete it. The other was her art blog, and while it didn't have many followers, the ones it did have seemed to genuinely appreciate and interact with her content. Regardless if the art was loved or hated, the sheer ability to evoke an emotional reaction from others was enough. She chose not to share her race, gender, or sexual orientation because such details were irrelevant in whether or not someone would enjoy her artwork, and, quote, anyone who asked those kinds of questions seemed racist, homophobic, and sexist. She didn't care what people assumed, but only what they thought of her art. Then, somewhere around the 300 follower mark, along came the social justice warriors. Because she drew some same-sex couples in different races, they accused her of being a straight, white girl, using the LGBTQ culture to turn a profit. She was also accused of being fatphobic because she drew larger women in unbelievable proportions. One of the more extreme examples given was an instance of drawing herself kissing another girl and receiving comments that accused her of, quote, queerbaiting, because even if she were gay, she was, quote, heteropassing and shouldn't be trying to benefit off the back of another queer person who might have it worse. Then, the grand finale is when she draws her best friend, Natalie, who happens to be Sri Lankan. A few days after posting it, the hate comments returned in full force. I want to quote one so you understand just how extreme these claims are. Quote, you're fucking disgusting. How dare you draw a woman of color? You racist piece of shit. You really are going to sit here and profit off the back of a woman of color and then just fucking do that? This is why I hate white people so much. You take and take and take without ever thinking of anyone else. There's a few more sentences, but honestly, I'm just sick of reading it, so you're probably just as sick of hearing it. Shannon said these comments continued one after the other and caused her a great deal of stress. While she always welcomed feedback, good or bad, the blind hatred was something that she would never experience in her life before. Before this, she'd only received one or two comments per post, but suddenly there were hundreds of hate messages on this picture alone. Obviously, she tried to explain herself, but the social justice warriors weren't having it. They didn't care if the girl in question happened to be Shannon's friend. They didn't care if she herself happened to be a female bisexual who suffered from multiple mental illnesses. That only made things worse. Eventually, it escalated to people saying she should end her life, and she deleted the blog entirely. From then on, she only used Tumblr to view Riverdale spoilers, but she still saw the same problem regularly happening to other artists. In a nutshell, this 13-minute video sent one clear message. Shannon was relentlessly and unfairly harassed on Tumblr, but she was a great person. Before we go any further, I need you all to think about this story. If you heard this from a brand new YouTuber without a shred of evidence, would you believe it? Would you care if it was a lie made for entertainment purposes only? Now, I don't use Tumblr very often other than to post a thing or two here and there. Don't really get much more complicated than that, so I can't really judge if this seems like something that would happen. But if any of you are familiar with the platform, a little more, common use, I'd love to hear your thoughts. The next video was uploaded on July 9th. And don't worry, I'm not trying to take you through every video, but the details of this one actually become important later, so I want to make sure that you get the key points of her delivery. This episode is titled, I Was Catfished, Storytime. In this tale, we journey back to 2006, when everyone except for the students of Shannon's super-duper Catholic middle school were still on MySpace. If we've reached the age where the younger crowd doesn't know what that is, it was essentially like first Facebook. Imagine if Facebook lets you add music to your profile, customize your entire background, and rank your friends into a top 8 list. Yeah, kind of like that. Apparently, the school held parent meetings to spread awareness of the dangers of MySpace, which Shannon summed up as essentially saying we'd be raped and killed if we used it. Parents banned it from use, and a certain void was left in the 21st century teen life. Luckily, Shannon's friend found a website called Stardoll. It let children dress celebrities in different clothes, but it also allowed users to create profiles and message one another. It even had a top 3 friends list and status updates. As an unpopular, tiny blonde emo girl with a speech impediment, Shannon especially appreciated not needing to upload a profile photo. Instead, she created this gorgeous avatar with a big ass and huge, well, you know. Life on Stardoll quickly evolved into a competition of who could acquire the most friends. There was nothing worse than seeing a classmate with 5,000 while Shannon only had 300. She would add anyone, whether she knew them or not, in an attempt to keep up, and after the first week, she was topping 500. Not only did she add tons of random people, she messaged them as well. A lonely teen was getting her first taste of internet friendship, and it was addictive. The first real connection she made was with a girl named Amy. She and Shannon had lots in common, and soon, they were talking 24/7 with the goal of acquiring internet boyfriends as a top priority. It wasn't long before Sasuke Uchiha 666 appeared in Shannon's life, and the name, of course, won her over immediately. It was a combination of a beloved anime character and, of course, Satan's presumed favorite number. She'd found her soulmate. She immediately told Amy about this irresistible boy on a brand new account with zero friends and how she couldn't wait to message him. Amy couldn't have been more supportive, but before Shannon could message Sasuke, he messaged her. Despite not having an actual profile photo, he said she was the cutest girl he'd ever seen. And the church bells began ringing in Shannon's ears. Seriously, though, like, those are actually her words. I'm not being sarcastic. She even introduced herself as his future bride, gushing over how cute he was, which, you know, he was totally into. After 3 days of getting to know one another, Sasuke asked Shannon to be his girlfriend. Like all new couples, they talked at each opportunity, gushed over one another, shared their most intimate thoughts. The two began talking more often, but Shannon spent less time with Amy as a result. Fast forward 3 weeks, and the relationship is still flourishing. But, as far as Shannon's parents know, she's simply obsessed with dressing celebrity dolls. Unfortunately, that meant it was the first thing she would lose when grounded. For an entire weekend, she wasn't allowed to use the internet, so on Monday morning, Shannon rushed to the school, fantasizing about her reunion with Sasuke. She imagined he was worried sick, and she couldn't wait to read his messages. But the moment she saw her friends, that dream began to crumble. They were approaching her in a panic, asking if she was okay, and Shannon knew she needed to get online immediately. Making a beeline for the computer, she logged in to see zero messages from Sasuke. And she'd been deleted from his profile. Not only that, she'd been replaced. In true rebellious emo teen fashion, she posted bulletin after bulletin, calling Sasuke a piece of shit and expressing her general hatred. When Amy saw these posts, she immediately rushed to Shannon's defense, and their friendship returned to what it had been before Sasuke. A couple of days later, Sasuke deleted his Stardoll account and successfully ghosted Shannon. She didn't even have his email address. He was just gone. Shannon would eventually delete her own Stardoll account, and though she and Amy lost touch at that point, they reunited on MySpace 2 years later. Shannon was excited to rekindle their friendship, but Amy messaged her saying she needed to get something off her chest and asked if Shannon remembered Sasuke. Well, as most of you have probably realized by now, Amy was Sasuke. What was Shannon's reaction? She wanted to die. But she couldn't help respecting Amy's huge balls. They made up and even remained friends afterwards. The end. Okay, now that's Shannon's story. Again, without any evidence, but that's fine. No one would really have those receipts, and I mean, who would lie about something so pointless anyway? Right? Shannon continues uploading story times with embarrassing tales of her past, and she seems to have hit the perfect mixture of comedy and sympathy. But in the sixth video, she tries a change of pace. On November 10th, she discusses a feud between Jeffree Star and Thomas Halbert, both renowned makeup artists, to speak about mental illness. Thomas accused Jeffree of being a racist, and Shannon very much took Jeffree's side. But I'm not personally familiar with the situation here, so just to be clear, not big on it. We're just simply touching on this as it was her first attempt at an actually serious topic. If you happen to watch it later, be aware Thomas was using he-him pronouns at the time of Shannon's recording, but currently uses she-they. One of the first points that she made is the fact that Thomas provided no evidence of Jeffrey actually using the N-word. Though, since this supposedly happened in person, I'm not sure what proof was reasonably expected here. It wasn't like it occurred over text, like 90% of Shannon's stories, but these allegations are much more serious than children just trolling each other online, so let's keep going. She states her opinions as fact, without offering any source links. Most notably, when she says Jeffrey, quote, included proof that Thomas was trying to ruin other people's careers and lying to gain favor with certain influencers. I honestly don't know who's telling the truth, but that's not really the point here. Obviously, Shannon still has a fairly small following, so she can just get away with sloppy language, like saying something has been, quote, proven outside a court of law, but in the real world, that's gonna get you into trouble. Apparently, Thomas also brings up their mental illness at some point, which Shannon said she did in a disrespectful manner, as if it were an excuse for the poor behavior. Again, I don't know if Thomas did that or not, but it did lead to an interesting quote from Shannon. She specifically says, "I used to be horrible to the people around me, but it wasn't just because I was mentally ill. I just happened to also be mentally ill. I did things I willingly chose to do. Things to hurt other people and myself because it caused them pain. Not because I didn't know it was wrong, but because I wanted to cause them pain." You may want to consider this a form of evidence later, so I'm just going to leave it here. There's one more quote that I couldn't resist using from the end of this video. Shannon speaks directly to Thomas, saying, "You're a public figure who makes very public accusations and statements about everyone else being fraudulent and vile, so you cannot just excuse yourself from the table when that setting that you're benefiting from comes back to you." Just let that simmer there for a while. Now, I'm not going to break down the entire December 1st video where she claims someone is threatening to sue her for stealing their art. I just want to point out a few more notable pieces of information that she shares about herself. And they all happen in the first 2.5 minutes. It begins with a very happy Shannon explaining why she sounds so excited about this revelation. It's because getting emails and direct messages of pure vitriol somehow makes me happy. I'm not wired right. They engage my angry Taurus soul in a way that nothing else comes close to. So I just want to be upfront with you all. That's the person you're investing your time in. She says it in a half-serious, half-joking manner, but guys, when someone jokes about one of their faults, it's usually true. They know themselves a lot better than you do, so, I mean, it's up to you, but sometimes you can take their word for it. Practically in the same breath, she goes on to say, "I do not have the screenshots or DMs or anything proving this happened. If you want to accuse me of lying, feel free." And my personal favorite comes when she recounts the Instagram messages from the nameless girl accusing her of theft. "Now again, I don't have the screenshots. I'm paraphrasing from my biased and inaccurate mind. Alzheimer's runs in my family. It's a good chance I'm probably making some of this up, or it didn't say exactly that." She's telling you the story isn't true. And I could list these same types of examples from almost every video on her channel, but if I did that, we would definitely need to dedicate like multiple episodes to just this one case, so we're just cherry picking the best. On the bright side, we're finally finished with 2018. Just not by much. I want to make a pit stop at the We Need to Talk About Cristalli video from January 2nd, 2019. He was a young animator, already hated for tracing, stealing artwork, and possibly buying subs. And then he got hit with the big guns. He was accused of asking minors for pictures. Oh yeah, one of those guys. Again, he is not our focus here, so I don't really have hard research on him specifically, but based on his legal trouble, it seems relatively true. A quick search also revealed plenty of hate videos. Well, hell, he could probably be one of our future episodes. I'm definitely not defending him. Shannon, though, begins the video with, The internet is a terrible place filled with greedy assholes who, like myself, find a way to make money off of it. And she then reminds the audience she was, quote, catfished and subsequently harassed for about 10 years. She's talking about Amy. Remember her? The friend she met online who pretended to be Sasuke? Okay, good. Just making sure. Anyway, Shannon had never actually heard of Cristalli before, seeing an Instagram comment from Mediocre Art asking for her thoughts on the situation. Did the screenshot look like the Shannon suggesting a topic to herself on an alt account thing? I thought so, but I can't really swear to it. Otherwise, I don't fully understand why she felt forced to respond if she, quote, felt uncomfortable talking about it. But she says it immediately worried her because she was not only asked to comment on something she knew nothing about, but it was also about an extremely sensitive topic. Since she personally knows victims of childhood abuse, it's a subject she takes very seriously. Therefore, she needed to be sure of Cristalli's guilt before speaking out. She stresses the need to have proof before ruining someone's life and stresses her distaste for those, like Anision, who fake allegations without proof simply because they dislike someone. On January 11th, she uploaded an hour-long video, and it's an important one. Shannon calls it, "I was stalked for 8 years," but I call it Amy's Big Sequel. Even though videos with mentions of Amy have been labeled as story times, they aren't told in fun, silly ways like the others. Shannon treats these as legitimate, serious events from her past. She even includes a trigger warning for stalking and harassment. She still makes jokes at her own expense and clarifies she knows her actions were wrong, but it's done with a completely different tone. After a short recap, Shannon starts by explaining she and Amy actually kept in touch through AIM. For those of you that aren't aware or a little too young for it, it was like a classic old school instant messenger. But yeah, that and emails. After quitting Stardoll, but before getting MySpace, which contradicts her previous story, and Shannon was actually jealous of her friend at that time, but Amy was thin and beautiful and had her own cell phone and was allowed to do whatever she wanted and boys fought over her and blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, Shannon felt like a prisoner. She had to work in her parents' sheet metal shop, and she couldn't even wear makeup or get the haircut she wanted. Eventually, she couldn't take it anymore and began creating boyfriends of her own. She jokes she's a terrible liar who can never keep the story straight, and always ends up exposing herself. You see what I'm saying? The longer she told these lies, the harder they became to coordinate. First came a neighbor named George. Then Garrett, the bad boy. Of course, she also talked about real friends and crushes from school, but their stories never intertwined, and that is something Amy would begin to question. She implied the real friends might not care for Shannon as much as she thought if they couldn't even bother to take an interest in her love life. Shannon only had two options, come clean or bring her two worlds together in a single narrative. Obviously, she chose the latter. After hearing Amy had two guys fighting over her, Shannon claimed her friend Sage tried to seduce a boy she liked. Apparently, she just started watching Degrassi, so opening her stories up to be more dramatic and soap opera-like was a very good thing in her opinion. An immediate problem was this was Amy's ride-or-die nature. She was furious. She ranted about wanting to kick Sage's ass, which was thankfully impossible with the girls living in two different states, but Shannon rolled right along with it. She said horrible, hateful things about Sage, claiming she was out of her life forever. A couple months later, Shannon graduated middle school and was finally allowed to get a MySpace. When determining her top eight, she chose Sage, her actual IRL best friend, for the first slot, and that enraged Amy. Shannon was suddenly flooded with angry messages to the point that she set her status to away and ignored everything while the "how could you be so stupid" messages continued. This strategy worked for a few hours, but eventually Sage called Shannon in tears. It seemed Amy decided to send Sage a very opinionated email calling her every name in the book. Of course, Shannon couldn't admit to knowing why Amy did this, so she had to go along with calling her a psycho. After crying for hours, Sage agreed to let Shannon handle Amy. And this is where the truth was finally revealed. Revealed poorly, but, you know, revealed nonetheless. Shannon wrote a long email explaining her stories from the past year were all lies. And since it was Amy's fault she felt the need to lie, it was Amy who owed Sage an apology. Though Shannon now acknowledged this was a dick move, she thought she could simply explain herself. She had no idea it would make things so much worse. Regardless of whatever reaction was expected, Amy responded with 10 emails and a couple of hundred AIM messages. There was a long list of basic insults, but most revolved around calling Shannon ugly and threatening to kick her ass. The only part that actually worried her was the threat to expose her. The thought of her friends knowing what she did was terrifying. In a panic, she blocked Amy on all social media platforms and posted several messages to her MySpace wall, explaining an insane person was making up lies about her and should be blocked immediately upon contact. To prove her claims, Shannon posted select snippets of Amy's angry emails, and it worked. Everyone believed her. The drama was finished. Fast forward a couple months to December of Shannon's freshman year, and she receives an email from an address that's simply John Smith, with a bunch of numbers behind it. The message said she was a terrible person, listed her friends by their full names, included extremely personal details down to, well, right down to what she was wearing. This initial email didn't particularly frighten her, but because it included such accurate information, she assumed it came from someone she knew in real life. The realization this information was easily accessible on social media didn't come until much later. The second email came from a different address 3 days later, and the next one came the following week, at which point they began arriving nearly every day. Shannon grew increasingly paranoid as the emails continued for the next 3 months, and even when they suddenly stopped, she kept obsessing over who could be behind them and why. Even her sister and parents were suspects, but things didn't stay quiet for too long. The great Facebook migration was just around the corner, so Shannon followed suit and made a new profile where she continued posting every detail of her life. The emails started up again almost immediately, and they were more effective than ever. Shannon described it as if someone had taken a harassment class and then passed it with flying colors. This cycle of receiving the emails for months at a time continued for years and placed severe strain on Shannon's mental health. She changed her email address several times, but the messages always returned, and their numbers always increased during May, her favorite month. On Shannon's birthday during sophomore year, a particularly cruel email detailed the reasons that she should kill herself on that day, down to only needing one date for the tombstone. Determined not to let this person ruin another May, Shannon quit the internet. She deleted her social media accounts, stopped checking her email. There was no way left for this person to reach her. The only problem was, Facebook couldn't remind everyone it was her birthday, and as a result, only one friend remembered it. This only reinforced what the emails had been saying all along. Shannon was alone, and nobody loved her. She felt completely isolated. Since the emails were true anyway, she went straight home and unquit the internet. Her social media accounts were restored, and the cycle of cruel emails resumed, along with Shannon's growing paranoia. In all these years, she never told a soul what was happening. Not her parents, not a friend, no one. Additionally, she deleted every message the moment she finished reading it, so she had no proof either. Remember the Tumblr hate? She doesn't elaborate how, but she learned this stalker was also responsible for starting the drama over the drawing of her Sri Lankan friend. Now, next, we need to jump ahead a couple more years to Shannon fighting with her boyfriend. Since he didn't have Twitter, she tweeted some fake emo goth thing about being sad and alone, and the boyfriend instantly texted her, wanting to meet as soon as possible. She picked him up, and while they rode around, he told her someone sent him several long texts saying he should break up with her, and why. Shannon tried to play it off by saying it must be a prank or some girl who liked him, but she didn't know who it could be. Eventually, she admitted everything, and the boyfriend was mortified. He wanted her to wait for the next email and take it to the police, but Shannon felt so much better after telling him. She decided telling the rest of her family would be good enough. As time passed, she began feeling more confident. But the people she told were adamant about taking steps to ensure that it did not happen again. Eventually, she agreed to go through all of her emails to check for any messages left behind, but she didn't find any. Instead, she found the 10 emails Amy sent the night she learned Shannon was a liar. The second she read them, everything clicked into place. She understood Amy was the stalker all along. They were even signed with the exact same kill yourself signature at the end. She felt relieved it wasn't someone from her real life. It wasn't someone who could be standing outside her window. After tracking down Amy's Facebook through a long list of social media platforms, Shannon had a lifetime movie epiphany and realized she wasn't completely innocent in the situation. So instead of calling the police or blaming Amy for horrible mental trauma, she wrote out the apology she should have given all those years prior. Within minutes of sending the message, Amy responded with a request to video chat, and, for the first time ever, they spoke face to face. Essentially, Amy admitted everything. The lies Shannon told all those years ago triggered her PTSD so she could make fake accounts of cute boys and follow Shannon on social media, and basically just use the information against her. Through a rough childhood and even now, when she struggled as an army wife, Amy unleashed her feelings of stress on Shannon. The two girls didn't end the conversation as friends, but they ended on friendly terms. Apologies were made, and the two still occasionally checked in on one another. You may want to compare certain details of Amy's life to someone that we're going to meet a little later, so for the record, Amy married shortly after high school, became an army wife, and had a daughter right away. All right? Okay, moving on. Shannon does learn to get slightly clickbaity a little, but her titles technically fit the story, so they really aren't blatant lies like, rice gum or whatnot. Hers are more for the shock factor. One is called, "My art is racist now. Yes, really." But it's literally just a story where a troll accuses her of being racist for a petty reason. There's also one called, "Drag parents need to be stopped." And one about Eugenia Cooney titled, "We're the problem, not Eugenia." That kind of thing. If we skip past these and go to May 15th, Creepshow uploaded a video titled, "Someone put me on r/delusionalartists, which is a fairly self-explanatory subreddit. Today, it has over 500,000 members, and it's a place to discuss bad art and worse artists. Basically, artists don't want to be discussed here. Unless you're Shannon. Well, she actually did show one screenshot of the post itself, but I was unable to find it on Reddit. The user's profile was deleted, and like myself, some commenters theorized she simply created the post herself as a way to create her next topic and plug her merchandise in one go. This post included a link to her merch, was under the subcategory of arrogant artists, and titled "Unbelievably Terrible." Yet, it was posted by a fan being ironic. Don't misunderstand, though. Shannon was disappointed by this turn of events. When she thought it was negative, she felt like she'd been seen for the first time. She replied to and shared the original post, but the fact it was made by a fan seemed to ruin that experience. Fortunately for her, it wasn't a total loss. There was a genuine hater in the comments who accurately predicted her eventual appearance on LOLCOW, but more on that later. For now, you just need to know Shannon gave the R Delusional Artist treatment 3 out of 5 stars and could only hope she would one day be featured by someone who legitimately hated her work. Luckily for her, they do. But by then, so many people will hate her it won't even register on our radar. And that's really it for this one. She plugged her merch one more time, the story was finished in under 4 minutes, blah blah blah. The rest of the 16-minute video discussed random creepy dolls and paintings, which probably should have been the title, but, you know, hey, that wouldn't have gotten as many clicks, right? Here we start to see a shift in Shannon's priorities as she pulls away from story times to focus on drama videos. She covered everyone from Daddy O5 to Nicole Arbour and anyone else who was a hot topic 3 years ago. The July 17th video titled, "We Need to Talk About Jake Yonsei," a former RuPaul Drag Race contestant, is relevant for two reasons. First, because Shannon predicted her own downfall, and, you know, I do think that's a little funny. Second, because she mentions reaching 100,000 subscribers a few days prior. And that is a huge deal for any YouTuber, as this is when you receive the coveted silver play button. Most agree, I mean, it's a pretty fancy flex, you know. The only problem is YouTube had so far failed to acknowledge that she passed the 100,000 mark, which meant she couldn't apply for her play button. Aside from simply being impatient, she says, "I feel like something's gonna happen, and I'm gonna lose all of my subscribers because I'm just gonna be exposed for being a turtle who just learned how to speak." Despite the turtle joke and just how much Shannon enjoys calling herself an idiot, I think she's fairly intelligent and knows exactly what she was doing. But let's keep going and see what you guys think. Oh yeah, and she did eventually get the play button, you know, in case anybody gives a shit, so. Creepshow Art, the social justice warrior? Now that Creepshow Art had over 100,000 subscribers, it was only a matter of time before one of her drama videos garnered a response. And I have no doubt she waited for it with the anticipation of a child going to Disney World. Don't forget, even negative attention from a well-known creator can drive heavy traffic through another channel, and, well, by mid-2019, Shannon had already called out quite a few of those without any sign of slowing down. On July 28th, she uploaded, "Jessica Yaniv is a vile individual." For a change, this is a case my writers were familiar with. Shannon chose a safe, easy target. Cliff Notes version? She's a predator disguised as a transgender woman. YouTube is full of hate videos about her, but they're from roughly 3 years ago. For the most part, it seems like she was chased off the internet, but aside from harassing women and children, she made money by visiting different salons and demanding to have her genitals waxed. Even worse, when her chat logs were eventually leaked, she was exposed for going into gyms and restrooms to openly stare at women's genitals, because she wanted to see if they were on their period. It actually does get worse, honestly, but this show is not about Jessica. It's about Creepshow, so moving on. These types of cases gave Shannon a certain level of credibility. Clear-cut, black-and-white situations just like this, and the upcoming spats with Anision made her seem like a good, trustworthy person. Afterwards, she went on to discuss Belle Delphine, Billie Eilish, and Lena Dunham, just to name a few more, but the list goes on and on. They weren't all negative, but they didn't have to be. She just needed their names in the title. If her claims are true, Shannon did see a minor taste of drama from fans when she made a poll asking if she should upload a story time or Jessica Yaniv update. Certain people were getting tired of the drama and they just simply wanted their story times back. Even though the update won with 65% of the votes, her comments section said otherwise. Her solution was to add an almost 5-minute intro to the video, stating her disappointment. You don't realize how long that actually is until you hear Shannon go on a righteous rant. I actually scrolled through her community posts in search of these comments, but all I found was the update, explaining that she deleted the poll due to the comments. And she called her fans lemons? The things she said weren't totally wrong. I mean, it is important to spread awareness about predators, and it is okay to not like every single video a creator uploads, but it's not okay to scold your fans for something when you specifically delete the evidence of it. God, I mean, at least snap a few fucking screenshots. Look, here, let me sum the whole thing up with her conclusion. The fact so many of you literally accidentally undermine victims of sexual assault and categorize gossip, tea, and drama with a child predator, that bothered me, and I would be remiss not to include this part in my video. Oh, if only we could all be so enlightened. / sarcasm. I wouldn't call preferring a story time to a serious triggering issue that many can't listen to as undermining the victims. But considering most of her demographic likely consisted of younger viewers, I could see how they may not have the same respect or concerns for those issues yet. She implies there were specific comments that she found particularly unsettling, but, well, since they're gone, I mean, we can't really judge that for ourselves. Anyway, Jessica denied the allegations, challenged another big YouTuber to a debate, and lost, which is what Shannon discusses in this video, while reiterating her disgust with the whole situation. At the end, it's worth noting she does speak directly to Jessica, claiming her first exposure video received several comments revealing her address, but that Shannon deleted each one because no matter what the situation is, it is never okay to dox someone. And then she said fuck you at least 10 times, but you know, I mostly just wanted to share her feelings about doxing because she was really strongly against it in this instance. It can be difficult to determine a creator's growth when looking back as we are now, especially when a controversy causes a massive influx of engagement. But by comparing the video's views, we can still get an idea of what Shannon was thinking. For example, her first video discussing Jessica, a topic everyone was following, has 428,000 views today. The one after it is titled, "Model Fakes Being Trans to Get Out of Trouble," and it only has 194,000 views. The difference is, people probably searched for Jessica Yaniv, so several first-time viewers found Shannon, whereas the video of a nameless model pretending to be trans probably received the bulk of its views from her subscribers. The next story time, the one she posted instead of Jessica's second video due to the negative comments, only has 94,000. So it's not surprising she would phase them out in favor of her hotter topics. On September 12th, she found a golden ticket in her first Anision video. I'm sure you remember him from our own episodes earlier, but there's so much more to this guy that we'll likely have to have a sequel also, so yeah. Creepshow and Onion Boy had a little tiff as well. YouTube is almost like a small town. Everyone's interacted with everybody at some point or another, or eventually will. Now, I know this has already been a long journey, but there's one more thing I need to tell you before we begin the downfall of Creepshow art. Throughout her videos, it's common for Shannon to reference the time that she spent homeless. Obviously, homelessness isn't something anyone should ever be shamed for. Shit happens. Not everybody's lucky enough to be born into a privileged support system, especially when life inevitably kicks you in the ass. But this situation will become important later. Hear me out. Shannon continues being Shannon right on into 2020. She throws an occasional story time in with the drama videos, covers Black King fishing, J.K. Rowling tweets, and all the major drama topics, but the few responses she received were from the clear-cut cases, like Onision. So her fans continued supporting her with blind devotion, and her channel continued to grow at a rapid pace. And hell, she even turned against Jeffree Star, and she loved him when Thomas was the only accuser. The problem is, the more subscribers she collected, the more confident she became. And whatever time she previously spent researching was drastically decreased. At least, that's how it seems when you look at the results. You remember when I pointed out Shannon's rant about child abuse and how serious it was to make allegations without proof? Excellent. The video itself was deleted long ago, but there are Twitter screenshots dated May 8th of 2020, meaning the video was posted within a day or two before. Shannon falsely accused Ariel Versace and The Vixen, two well-known drag queens from RuPaul, of spreading revenge porn of a minor. Yet, when she was called out by Louis Adamson on Twitter, she responded with a denial claiming, "I literally said they spread sexts that Jake Yonce sent as a minor, and fact check me right now, all the tweets I included in the video are still up." That language is important. Shannon had already removed the video, so she thought she could gaslight her way out of trouble. Unfortunately for her, Lewis's next response happened to be a clip of the now-deleted video where Shannon literally says, "What was posted was revenge porn, his sex, his nudes. Revenge porn was posted by and retweeted by Shea Coulee, the Vixen, and Ariel Versace." Considering this is old false news, I don't really think we need to go into the nitty-gritty of the whole incident. Was it still wrong to share sex? Absolutely, but there's a big difference between spreading someone's word versus their, you know, actual body. After Louis posted the clip, Shannon stopped replying. Now, this is where things might get a little confusing. Once upon a time, there was a smaller art commentary channel run by an artist called Toby. Though her channel's gone, some of her content lives on through others who documented Creepshow art in real time. Like Cecil. And I genuinely cannot recommend her enough. Oh, okay, sorry. Back to Toby. Toby was brave enough to make a legitimate video discussing Creepshow art's most recent allegations and how she'd been letting her research ethic slip a great deal over the past year. She made clear, concise points, had enough screenshots to back her words up, even though everyone knew exactly what she was referring to, and she got a hefty boost in subscribers for the trouble. The video started by discussing the false CP allegations and how others in the community were too frightened to speak against her, then transitioned into Shannon's tendency to overreact to criticism. Yes, trolls suck. They're internet parasites, and every creator must either learn to ignore them or quit. Even when you get rid of one, there's 10 more around the corner. They're just people who hate their lives and feel the need to make everybody around them miserable. They aren't even worth the time it takes to type a response. The real problem is, some creators can't tell the difference between trolling and constructive criticism. If you're thinking Shannon might be in that category, you're correct. Her harsh responses to genuine criticism was an ongoing problem. For now, let's talk about the multitude of responses that spawned from Toby's video, starting with Shannon's. It was released on June 10th and starts by saying Toby, her art, and her video are dope, and everybody should check her out. Shannon eventually agrees with several points made in Toby's video, including the part about how much she's changed over the last year. She reiterates she and her husband were living out of a car in Portland while she worked multiple jobs when she began her channel. It was never meant to become anything more than a way for her to unwind. But thanks to YouTube, she was able to stop sleeping in public places, having men follow her to the car or waking up to a random guy jerking off at her window. And she said that that actually really happened and implied that she may have PTSD. Of course, that was just how to explain how Toby was correct. Shannon has changed a lot, because when she first made those videos, she wasn't in a good place physically or mentally. She's grateful her audience enjoyed the older content, but she's simply not that person anymore and can't go back to being her. There's brief mention of panic attacks and self-harm before addressing Toby's preference for the older content. Obviously, I was only able to view pieces of Toby's video, but to me, the context was purely addressing her lack of research and ability to take criticism. For Shannon to respond with something like this, well, it feels like two different conversations entirely, but let's keep going. Creepshow goes on to say she does want to take accountability for her actions, but she also wants to get more context where needed. She accepts the full blame for her false allegations, apologizes without making excuses, and acknowledges to do otherwise would be incredibly hypocritical, considering she often judges how others should handle these situations. But there were some parts of her video that she stands by and feels were misrepresented in the backlash. Shannon is confident Toby was referring to another artist, Hopeless Peaches, when she stated other creators agreed with her but were too frightened to speak out. She considered Peaches to be a genuinely close friend, and that is what hurt her the most. Shannon had shared a lot of personal information with Peaches, and knowing they were sharing that information with others was a hard blow. Also, to anyone who wishes to look into this later, please be aware there are two Peaches. Shannon previously did a video on a singer called Lovely Peaches, and I specifically didn't discuss it to avoid confusion. She seems like a genuinely terrible person and all, and should not be confused with Hopeless Peaches. I think this entire case is the textbook example of how all internet drama is made. Toby's words made Shannon believe hopeless Peaches had betrayed her, but, spoiler alert, it wasn't Peaches. The prevailing theory is that it came from another art commentary channel run by Omnia. Later, Toby and Omnia both admitted to discussing a video about Creepshow art, but that won't come out until after a ton of damage is already done. The other half of her response is addressing the Jaclyn Hill video, which also has been removed. Now, you're probably sick of hearing this by now, but Jaclyn is also an internet personality who is fairly unpopular, and Shannon made a video about her. Despite who Jaclyn is or isn't, the video was basically comparing her to her estranged biological father, who is also a public figure. He's some kind of, like, supposed healing guru or something, but the jokes Shannon made about lying being genetic were in real poor taste. Anyway, after Shannon's apology, the community slowly began to unravel. I'm going to clarify one more time that our focus is Creepshow, so I'm not going to cover each and every separate community spat. A community at war. A vast majority of the content we're about to discuss has been deleted, but we're going to do our best. On July 2nd, Toby made a short skit where she pretended not to know Creepshow responded to her video and kind of freaked out, saying she was going to delete her channel. It was funny and well-received, but a few days later, she uploaded an emotional, angry rant. It was clearly filmed while she was having a particularly hard time, and it probably should have never been uploaded. She was sick of everything and everyone. She even mentioned being a Shane Dawson fan, which was probably one of the most unpopular opinions that you could have had at that time. Shane is another internet personality accused of being racist. Well, I honestly don't know if he is or not, but this rant turned a ton of people against Toby. Ultimately, she was revealed as someone who could dish it out, but not take it. And her channel was eventually deleted. While this interlude took place, Shannon was able to sit back and enjoy the fallout. One of her problems had literally taken care of itself. Of course, there was still Omnia, her boyfriend, Kai, and Hopeless Peaches to contend with. And yes, Omnia was dating another artist who also began discussing the drama. This couple has a very deep rabbit hole of their own. I hesitate to actually dive too deeply in while we're in the thick of another madness, but Kai ultimately deleted his channel and the couple had a public Bessie breakup filled with all kinds of serious allegations. Thankfully, their focus was only against Shannon for the briefest moment, so we're not really missing anything. For now, just know that Omnia uploaded Creepshow Art Missed the Mark with her apology video, which, of course, Shannon responded to in the same way as Toby's. She said Omnia was amazing, and everyone should go show her some love. But in like a super weird sarcastic way, she was described as mean and bullying, so if you're confused by that, so am I. I guess some people are apparently calling it love bombing. I don't know. As for Peaches, let me explain why Shannon assumed she was the one talking to Toby behind the scenes. Well, after Shannon's Jaclyn Hill video, Peaches had soft-blocked her and tweeted some passive-aggressive things. Their friendship was on the rocks, but there was nothing drama-worthy until the Toby misunderstanding. Then, on October 23rd, Peaches tweeted, "I think I'm just done. Goodbye." Like many of us, she struggles with mental health and is known to be fairly open about it when speaking. In this instance, everybody knew she was referencing extreme self-harm. The next day, she returned with, "Sorry for the last tweet," and kind of went back to business as usual. A YouTuber called Prison Mate Luke took her casual return to mean that she was only baiting her audience for sympathy. Peaches immediately denied this and apologized for any confusion. And she also had friends speak up to say that she truly did experience a mental crisis. Personally, I would have also tried to pretend as if nothing happened, purely from my own embarrassment, but for the record, that strategy really never works. Normally, people are simply concerned and just want to make sure you're okay, but to have someone say you faked the whole thing sounds fucking terrifying. I agree with Madison from Cruel World Happy Mind on this note. I don't understand why someone would feel the need to speculate on this in the first place. You can't know what's going on in someone's head. Isn't it better to err on the side of caution, considering that it's an actual life at stake? All right, moving on. Luke made another video titled Stop Lying Peaches, where he detailed a longer timeline and claimed her fans should be made aware of her manipulation. He actually managed to misquote her while screen grabs were shown, but very few took the time to actually read what he displayed. Still, it was Shannon who caused her the most damage. She retweeted Luke's video, thanked him for making it, and filmed one of her own where she simply and openly agreed with his assessment. I can't be sure of the exact date it started, but Shannon began regularly posting about herself on Lolcow. For those not familiar, Lolcow is like the love child of 4chan and Reddit. It's a place for people to discuss the internet's most eccentric personalities. Users say anything they want under a warm blanket of anonymity, and one of the few rules they take very seriously is no self-promotion allowed. This means you're not allowed to post about yourself while pretending to be several different people, but that is exactly what Shannon did. Seriously, how anybody tries to get away with this kind of stuff without even bothering with a VPN, or I just never understand. For now, just know this is happening because it's going to come back around in a big way. This brings us to December 7th, when Shannon uploaded Hopeless Peaches Needs to Stop. She begins with the usual tactic of saying Peaches' content is wonderful. She still likes her, and this video isn't meant to cancel them, but then goes on to say horrible things that will obviously make everyone try to hate her. The screenshots Shannon chose to display are quite interesting, too. She's showing us the DM she exchanged with Peaches, but even while they're on the screen, she's misquoting them. One example is where Shannon claims, "You said me crying in a video where I discuss my feelings about this made you look like a bitch." Let me tell you what Peaches actually said, verbatim. And I can do that because it was on the screen. "I saw what you said, and I can understand you're upset with us not talking anymore, but you also painted me as a kind of a huge bitch, saying I was ranting and raving about you and how I was spreading private information about you to multiple content creators. I want to try and clear some things up as I have quite a few people who hate me right now, and that's where Shannon cut the message off. But Peaches was clearly trying to address a specific allegation. Shannon glossed over it as if Peaches were saying that she wasn't allowed to have feelings. I also want to point out that once again, Shannon lets us know she can't provide screenshots of everything because most of their conversations occurred on a Twitter account that was deleted. The whole thing was insanely harsh and the hate against Peaches increased." The day after Shannon's video, Peaches posted her own response, much of which she had evidence for. Yet, it was still received poorly. Her comments section exploded with angry people saying she needed to apologize for things she literally apologized for in that video. Some from well-respected members of the community. Over the following weeks, a slew of both hate and defense videos would be made about Peaches. But ultimately, I saw no proof of anything more than the fact that she mishandled a fight with a friend, which she still apologized for, even though it's hardly a crime. The arguments became painfully exaggerated to the point Peaches couldn't speak without being torn apart, and people were sick of the subject as a whole. While all of this is happening, Shannon is sitting pretty by comparison. She continued uploading her regular drama videos while exacerbating the community drama on Lolcow, and very few people were connecting the dots. The tide wouldn't begin to turn until the YouTuber Just Stop posted a well-received video exposing prison mate Luke for spreading misinformation, and Luke's response was pathetic. Since Shannon originally endorsed Luke's video, this was a big deal. The hate didn't stop immediately, but after the holidays, more people began defending Peaches. Okay, guys, we're finally in 2021. We're getting so close to the climax. Just hang in there. We need to hop over to Instagram and revive Toby for a second. She told everyone that Peaches had nothing to do with her Creepshow art video. She'd merely asked if Peaches had any experience with Shannon, as she had 15 other creators. And all had negative responses to share. Not only that, but Toby expressed this sentiment to Shannon in DMs months prior when her initial response was posted, meaning she was fully aware of Peach's innocence the entire time. Then, on January 21st, someone on Team Peaches uploaded a document of evidence detailing a summary of the events with screenshots. Shannon's lolcow section grew, as did general criticism for her involvement with the drama. Suddenly, she couldn't bash other people's crappy behavior anymore because too many people were focused on her own. So, in May, something happened that, in my personal opinion, was meant to distract people from these criticisms. Shannon claimed her YouTube was hacked. Being hacked is a very real, very scary threat to all online personalities. Knowing a simple delete button is all that stands between them and losing countless hours of their life's work. And that's pretty terrifying. That's why you always want a minimum of 2 backups. You can randomly generate 15 characters under 2-step authentication and all kinds of numbers and still not feel safe. Having everything deleted isn't even the only threat. You could have your private messages leaked. You could be blamed for any horrendous comments that they make. It's a nightmare. So do you want to guess what Shannon's hacker did? They changed her profile and banner. A channel with just over 500,000 subscribers. That just doesn't happen. And nobody believed her. On June 2nd, Creepshow took her first major blow when lolcow exposed her history of self-promotion with a compilation of her site posts. They have a reputation for exposing those who try this, and Shannon was no exception. She was pretending to be multiple people while simultaneously dissing and defending herself, all to attract more attention for her channel. The post that sent lolcow mods over the top was when Shannon revealed her own sister's private social media accounts. Her few remaining friends tried to defend her at first, but soon, even they accepted the cold truth when they realized how horribly Shannon spoke of them in the fake posts. She trashed them without mercy, just to create whatever narrative she was striving for on that particular day. She also deleted her Instagram posts and Twitter accounts somewhere in this time period. Whether it was to prevent anyone from taking screenshots, to avoid the accusations longer, or a combination of both, she did it without warning. When she finally did make a statement, it was via community post. So, what could Shannon possibly have to say for herself? Oh, it was actually Amy who doxed her sister. Yeah, you remember Amy? The internet stalker from the first chapters? Shannon would have us believe Amy had been spoofing her IP address all that time, and it was actually her making those posts on lolcow. Of course, Shannon was extremely hurt by this, didn't want to believe it, but the moment her sister was doxxed, and she had to accept it. She behaves as if speaking on this topic 2 years ago is proof that she's telling the truth, and though I don't pretend to be a tech whiz, actual professionals have said that her IP spoofing claims are completely impossible. Now, I'm not sure if Shannon thought this story was genuinely believable, or if it was a desperate Hail Mary because she couldn't think of another way out. What do you guys think? Meanwhile, Omnia and she were on decent terms by then, but even she said the story didn't make sense. The internet exploded. Big and small creators alike were crawling out of the woodwork to talk about it, but Shannon continued denying everything. You know, you would think this is the end, right? You know? That I'm just gonna say Creepshow fizzed out of existence and ask you to hit that subscribe button, but oh no, we're not there yet. This is actually when I introduce you to the woman who finally ended the debate once and for all. Was Amy ever real? Or had Shannon been lying to everybody since day number one? Believe it or not, it's actually an odd mixture of both. My friends, it's finally time to meet Emily Artful. Emily Artful. She too is an artist on YouTube. Noticed I said is, present tense. She's still going strong with almost 540,000 subs, and for good reason. She started her channel roughly 6 years prior to these events, and while the art community tore itself apart, Emily remained silent. She didn't discuss the drama or make passive-aggressive tweets. She just kept living her life. It started on June 8th when Emily posted a series of tweets about Shannon and the truth behind stalker Amy, which are still on Twitter to this day. In the first tweet, she states, "This woman has tormented me for years and years. I know her because my ex-boyfriend dated her after me. I moved on, but she slash they continued to harass and stalk me." Now, granted, this is debatable, but I think most people agree the drama had been fairly petty. Until now, sure. Talking behind your friend's back, lying, and many people's behavior turned scummy, but this took things to an entirely different level. Emily's tweet continued to make very specific, very serious allegations. Among them, threatening the lives of her and her children, using revenge porn against her, using her prior drug addiction against her, having her fired from multiple jobs, causing her to be homeless, making fake Emily Artful accounts in an attempt to cancel her. These actions pushed Emily to the brink of wanting to end her life on more than one occasion, and Shannon tried to blame the actions on a mutual friend until Emily was able to catch her red-handed by tracing her IP address. Even someone in Shannon's situation couldn't have these kinds of allegations thrown at them without evidence, but Emily had that in spades, and she showed it to the world in her June 12th video, and this was the final nail in Shannon's coffin. Quotation, Amy was the only thing granting Creepshow an inch of doubt with her superfans, and Emily's story cut right through it. Her video is aptly titled, "Creepshow Art Has Always Been This Way," and has over 4 million views with 23,000 comments, the vast majority of which are pretty supportive. I do recommend watching it on your own to hear Emily's experience firsthand. The internet only endured Shannon's wrath for a few years, but Emily's struggle lasted over a decade. You can't truly appreciate the impact made on her life until actually hearing it from the source. That being said, let's get into the video. It's about Shannon and her husband, Anthony. As explained in the tweets, Anthony is Emily's abusive ex-boyfriend, but for most of the video, she refers to him as Andrew. When recording, she hadn't intended to use his real name, but while editing, she decided she wasn't going to protect him anymore. Also, Emily is not delivering these allegations without taking responsibility for her own actions. She does acknowledge her own mistakes along the way, and honestly, I think it's admirable she was able to maintain her sobriety through this ordeal. Addiction isn't something to be ridiculed. I doubt there's anybody here who hasn't struggled with something of the sort in their own lives, whether personally or through family and friends. But society needs to reach a point where people can actually ask for help without feeling ashamed or embarrassed. Her timeline begins roughly at age 19, when she was a student still living at home and accepting music gigs. One job was to sing at Nickel City Arcade in San Jose, California, and Anthony was also there with his band. It's publicly known Shannon is from San Jose, and it's also close to Emily's hometown. This is when Anthony and Emily enter their toxic codependent relationship. She was taking multiple psych medications while abusing prescription sleeping pills. She had multiple breakdowns where she expressed being deeply unhappy and vulnerable, but each time, she and Anthony would cry and reconcile. The overall relationship was short-lived, but it left a lasting impression due to how frightened Anthony made her. Not only did he punch holes in the wall, he and a friend named Brandon would often fantasize about shooting up their high school in a way reminiscent of the Columbine Massacre. This disturbed Emily a great deal. She didn't believe they were joking, but even if they were, it's still horrible. Obviously, she doesn't have proof of something that occurred over a decade ago, but this would be a strange thing to lie about when she has so much more evidence for the rest. Later, she would also learn Anthony was a cheater. But that is probably the least of his crimes. And the actual breakup occurred shortly after Emily jokingly commented on a gay friend's post that he looked hot. Brandon then called, screaming and threatening to curb stomp her. She wasn't able to get in touch with Anthony afterwards, so the next morning, she went to his job. And guess what? Shannon worked there too. She didn't know who Shannon was yet. For now, she's merely a girl Emily knew of and occasionally waved to. Anthony hadn't come into work that day. And upon hearing this, Emily went home, cried about it, sent a final what the fuck message, and that was the end. It was further down the road when Anthony randomly reached out to Emily, apologizing for how things ended and hoping they could be friends. For a short time, they did begin talking again, but Emily felt it was unhealthy and tried to end the flirtatious friendship. And that is when Anthony decided they should have a professional relationship, and he asked her to sing on one of his tracks. The original MP3 actually had another girl already singing it, and Emily admits that she was a dick about it. She said the other girl sounded weak and that she could do it better. As it turns out, the other girl was Shannon. And Emily believes this moment is what set off the entire chain reaction to follow. When she and Anthony began working together, she noticed an increase in negative comments across her social media. And her Facebook was receiving more friend requests than usual. She didn't recognize anybody, but they showed a handful of mutual friends, and Emily added them. We can now be fairly certain these were Anthony and Shannon all along, allegedly. And soon after, Emily was hacked and locked out of her Facebook account. It dated back to when she was still in high school, and the messages contained compromising photos of herself. Some were her as an adult, but some were taken when she was still a minor. When the hacker tried to blackmail her with the images, she explicitly warned them they were essentially threatening to post CP. But the hacker didn't believe her. Or they simply didn't care. The pictures were then placed in a photo bucket account and used to taunt Emily. That situation would be insanely stress-inducing for most people, but Emily was also struggling with a drug addiction, her mental health, an eating disorder, and what she described as an abusive business relationship when this occurred. She had very little control of her own life, but she was still able to find a regular job. That is, until someone pretending to be a disgruntled client emailed Emily's boss a compromising video of her. Then she got fired and became homeless. As evidence of this occurrence, she's later able to bring in former boss to tell the story from his side, so that's also available if you want to look it up. The main takeaway here is that Creepshow Art, the woman who spent a good portion of her time discussing the hardships of homeless life, allegedly, played a significant part in making someone else homeless. And this is where I finally get to tell you guys how Shannon became homeless. Anthony actually did tell the full story on his own channel at one point, but if Shannon ever discussed it on hers, it was brief enough for me to have missed it. Though your brain turns to mush after listening to her for a few hours, so I mean, technically it's possible, but like most people didn't really fully understand the whole situation, so whatever. Once upon a time, a young couple named Shannon and Anthony lived in San Jose, but they didn't like it there. They essentially got in their car and started driving. They chose that lifestyle and could have returned to San Jose had they wished. Emily was a different kind of homeless. She had nowhere to go. When she was finally able to recover, she met someone new, moved in with them, and found a new job. Her life was finally getting back on track, but somehow, Anthony learned she was working at a restaurant, and he did everything in his power to find out which one. He even tried to duplicate one of her friend's Facebook accounts just to trick her into answering. Just so we're clear, this, right here, this is how horror movies start. Please be cautious when you are accepting friend requests. It does not take much time or effort to create a mock of somebody's page. Be safe. Thankfully, Emily realized what was happening before she revealed sensitive information. But it was a close call. The mean comments returned, and now that she knew she had a stalker, they terrified her. She had a handful of toxic people in her life that could easily have been the culprit. Over the next couple of years, Emily created her YouTube channel, entered a program, got sober, started therapy. Slowly but surely, she was building a happier, better life despite the anonymous stalker lurking in the background. I am in awe of the strength that must have taken. I mean, no words that my writer could write or that I could say would convey any kind of emotion expressed in her voice when she spoke of those events. During October 2017, one of her videos did very well, especially for a small channel, and Emily tweeted that it went viral. Right after tweeting, she thought better of it and added a correction to say, mini-viral. Anthony immediately began following her and harassing her about the statement, publicly accusing her of buying the views. After blocking him, he got onto another account to blast her for that as well, even tagging it with Black Lives Matter for literally no reason. Even if she had bought the views, which I have so far seen no evidence to support, his behavior is disgusting. When Emily blocked his alt account, he went to the trouble of making a new one called NotViral_Emily to further harass her through DMs. Of course, when she finally asks why he's harassing her, he denies it in full cliche gaslighter form. Moving forward, Emily tried to focus on creating unique content for her channel and noticed that there was a significant lack of story times combined with sketching. Hence, Sketchbook Storytime was born. Eventually, Emily began receiving comments asking if she was aware of Creepshow art. Some would call her a cheap imitation of Shannon or say Shannon was the ripoff, but they were all drawing her attention to the same place. Still, it didn't really concern her until a comment said Creepshow art was stealing her thumbnails and titles. You remember how Shannon had all those videos called Storytime? Well, they were originally named Sketchbook Storytime. In reality, the thumbnails were only slightly similar, but Emily did ask Shannon to change her titles, and she provided the DMs as proof. It was in a very polite, professional manner. By now, Emily had been on YouTube for a few years, but she was still a fairly small channel and unaware of Creepshow Art's true identity. Shannon agreed to change the title in a technically polite way, but really made sure to let Emily know that she got the idea from a different YouTuber who was using it, and that they told her it was fine. I'm not sure what to call her overall response, but it's like at least a like kind of kissing cousin deal to the backhanded compliment. For what it's worth, Emily tried to find others using the term Sketchbook Storytime in their titles without success. That should have been the end of it. But a couple of weeks later, Emily received another DM from an account called Brianna Lang. This one said, "I just found another channel that is copying you. Have you heard of Creepshow Art?" Emily politely disagreed, but Brianna tried to egg her on. Thankfully, Emily didn't take the bait. Ever since Shannon and Emily spoke directly regarding the Storytime titles, Emily had been following Shannon's Instagram, and one day, she noticed a drawing of Anthony. That is when Emily finally learned the two actually knew each other, but it took a little longer to learn they were dating. It freaked her out, so she unfollowed Shannon, but not because she thought Shannon was participating in her torment. She didn't even think Shannon knew about that part. At this point, Emily reflects back to her experience of being assaulted by Anthony while still at her father's house. He used to climb through her window when they were dating, but they were no longer together on the night in question. I think it's sufficient to say that he engaged in potentially non-consensual acts while Emily was under the influence. And considering the kind of person she knew Anthony to be, it's not surprising she would automatically assume Shannon to be another innocent victim who simply hadn't seen his true nature. Now, wanting proof of her stalker, Emily took a page from Anthony's playbook and made her own alt account, where she feigned to be another Emily hater. With it, she sent the stalker a link that would allow her to track his IP, and sure enough, it led her to Anthony and Shannon. She couldn't do very much with this information, but it was a huge relief just to know she wasn't crazy, that it had been really him all along. Eventually, Emily received a Snapchat featuring a picture of what she thought to be her city. Knowing it was Anthony, she questioned him. But they claimed to have been driven by their parents because they didn't have a license yet. Hinting the stalker was a minor will be important momentarily, but this girl was petrified. She fully believed Anthony was there for the sole purpose of killing her. She told him her gun and guard dog were ready and begged him to leave her alone, but you already know he didn't. Aside from the initial picture that began the conversation, Emily posts the chat in her video, but it's very hard to watch. She's terrified and attempting to be nice to him in hopes that he'll feel sorry for her. But he's just saying random, ludicrous statements. He's straight trolling, and the fact that he clearly thinks it's funny is honestly the cringiest part. The random messages had been coming for so many years from so many accounts that Emily began noticing the difference between the way Anthony and Shannon spoke. She theorizes everything started with Anthony calling the shots, but Shannon slowly became the mastermind over time. It would be impossible to count the sheer number of alt accounts they created. For each one Emily blocked, more continued to appear. They attacked her for featuring her son in a few videos near Halloween, trying to start drama in the comments like she was Daddy05. This is where Shannon got super confident, posting to LolCow. She tore Emily apart after each new video. In one, she claims Emily was bragging about almost killing her son twice, simply because she claimed she was exhausted at the same time the kid got sick. This is where she realized Shannon's main MO is to take a sliver of truth and just run wild with it. By now, Shannon and Anthony are aware Emily is documenting everything and that she knows they're her stalkers. So Shannon put a few security measures into place. She posted an Instagram story stating that she's been harassed online for the past 12 years, knows who it is, and may talk more about it later. Then, she goes on to list examples of what she did to Emily, as if she were the victim. Next, she created a patsy, using the name Britta Filter, a name used in relation to the stalker before. Shannon, allegedly, messaged Emily a wall of text claiming to be an anonymous concerned teen. Apparently, it was her younger brother stalking Emily all this time, but now that her family has been made aware, she should rest easy and know that they're putting a stop to it. She goes on to list several videos and bits of information this brother was in possession of as if to prove her claims, but she miscalculated when determining the kid's age. He would have only been 10 when the stalking began, and it's hard to believe a child so young could develop such an obsession for so long. The entire thing is riddled with plot holes and impossibilities, but the age is one of the easier things to point to. Emily asks for a video chat in order to prove the claim is false and lets Anthony, or Shannon, know she isn't buying it. But their response simply states the parents won't allow that for fear of legal repercussions. They try to further prove the teenage stalker story by listing other items they're in possession of, but, again, they only further incriminate themselves as they reveal a video only Anthony could feasibly have. This, along with a snarky message Shannon DM'd shortly after, sent Emily careening over the edge of her limit. And she finally confronted Shannon directly. Obviously, we're not detailing the 41 screenshots worth of messages in their entirety, so get ready for the Cliff Note version. Emily straight up asks Shannon if it's her or Anthony that's stalking her, and she lets her know that there was actually two occasions she tracked their IP address. The only thing she wants is to be left alone. But despite the evidence, Shannon continues to vehemently deny the accusation. In true gaslighter fashion, she then gets defensive over being accused and tries to say people have sent her things about Emily as well. As horrible as their exchange is, it does perfectly reveal exactly how manipulative Shannon can be. She even tried to list things she did to Emily as things someone did to her, and she said them before Emily could. That way, Emily looked like the liar if she tried to use it later. Hey, listen, if high school drama had a Super Bowl, this kind of shit is exactly what it would look like. Emily responds by saying she still intends to get a restraining order due to the overwhelming evidence, but when she starts to show doubt, Shannon latches onto it. She's so good at gaslighting. She not only managed to get Emily to apologize in case she was wrong, Shannon was also able to transition blame onto Brandon by saying he tried to have her fired from the prior year. I was screaming at the video. Oh my God. Emily didn't fully fall for it, but the conversation definitely reads like the tides were turning. It instilled a sliver of doubt during the actual DMs, but afterwards, she was able to shake it. The conversation turns extremely civil at the end as Shannon provides her P.O. box in order to send a restraining order. And at the very end, she throws in, "By the way, Brandon's name used to be on the P.O. box too. That might be important." Oh, I can't even. Listen, Emily wasn't sure what to do afterwards. I mean, did she want to spend her money creating documents on pursuing a restraining order? Was it even a real P.O. box? Ultimately, she decided to wait and see. And nothing else happened. It seemed like the drama was finally over. She concludes with an overview of her own theory, that what began as Anthony's obsession slowly morphed into Shannon's and then snowballed out of control. There's no direct evidence to show the level of Shannon's involvement, but given what we know of her behavior through the lolcow posts, combined with what Shannon herself told us in her own videos, I don't think Emily can be very far from the mark, but hey, that's just my opinion. On August 21st, Emily uploaded one more video where she recorded herself going into the messages on her phone and physically scrolling through them to prove they're not photoshopped. You're probably dying to know how Shannon responded, but you may be surprised to hear that the response didn't come until December 31st, over 6 months after Emily's. She didn't post anything before or since. Before it was released, the last video on her channel was dated June 6th and had nothing to do with the current drama. Her response has less than 700,000 views, and whether that's because no one cared anymore or, you know, they heard how bad it was, I can't tell you. What I can tell you is that Shannon shouldn't have made it. It's 2.5 hours long, and somehow she managed to both admit and deny Emily's accusations through the entirety of its duration. It begins by saying she won't address any accusations, except those made by Emily, because those are serious legal issues. And then throughout the video, she's verbally saying she and Anthony are innocent, Emily's a liar, and she can prove it. But her proof is knowing what Emily was doing every moment of her life over the past decade. So how does she know? The comments are overflowing with hate, as people were quick to call bullshit. Once you've seen how she operates, it's kind of hard to miss. She used cheap tactics to make Emily look bad, but that too was quickly called out. She used clips from a video where it sounded as if Emily admitted to dating a minor 4 years her junior. But by simply viewing that video in full, you can see the clip is taken completely out of context. Emily did not date a minor. She was the minor and practicing a form of role reversal. Kind of like how Shannon took what she did to Emily and morphed it into something a girl named Amy did to her. Most of Shannon's evidence was screenshots of Emily's social media posts, which had been, like, deleted for years by that time. Kind of like what that stalker had. Seriously, it's actually, like, a lot. On February 8th of this year, Emily made one last video titled, "I'm Done, Shannon." And this seems to finally be the end. I would be very surprised to see either channel revive this issue. Well, actually, you never really know with Shannon, so... Eh. The main point we'll be going over from this video is the legal action Shannon attempted to take against Emily behind the scenes. It's the only part directly related to Creepshow art, and the rest is about her personal life. If you want to check her out yourself to see how she's doing, awesome. I myself grew fond of her over the past weeks, but there's no reason to include more of her personal business in our breakdown. A few weeks prior to Creepshow's big video, Emily received an email from Shannon's lawyer, stating she would be taken to court for defamation if Emily did not remove all mention of Shannon's name and brand from her social media. They also asked her not to mention the legal letter, specifically adding that to do so would result in proceeding straight to litigation. Emily refused to cooperate, and Shannon's video was uploaded shortly after. I waited until now to share the intro because of the implications. It stated the audience would only be seeing this if she and Emily were able to reach a private settlement, or if they'd gone to court. But as we now know, neither of those things happened. Whether she left it in the video on purpose or by accident, it almost seems like Shannon was attempting to force Emily to remove her videos so she could post her own without having an opposing view to contradict her. Considering her track record, I feel like that's exactly what the plan was. Allegedly. Conclusion. So, where is Shannon today now that her response to Emily's accusations was branded as proof of her stalking? Well, I'd be shocked if she wasn't still lurking around under some random puppet account, but we may never know for sure. It's my personal theory she left her channel up as a way of making passive income. I can't be certain if the ads running on her videos are from her or YouTube, but they're still getting views and engagement. The most recent comments span anywhere from the last few months to even days. The internet is a big place. If you have a small audience, you can probably get away with lying for quite a while, but as your audience grows, so does your chances of being seen by somebody capable of calling bullshit. If you're trying to make a genuine life and career as a YouTuber using shady tactics, they're not worth the risk. Just be honest with your audience. They will respect you more for it. This really is a massive topic, so if you want to know more, I really can't recommend Cruel World Happy Mind and The Right Opinion enough. And don't forget, Cecil has the entire case of Toby, Omnia, Kai, and others in her breakdown. I only hope my humble contribution holds a candle to their masterpieces. All right, guys. This has been another episode of The Dark Side of YouTube. Thank you so much for joining us again, Darksiders, and don't forget, do us a little favor. Like, subscribe, ring the bell, do whatever it is y'all do best out there on the internet, and don't forget, don't do anything I wouldn't do.